Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Tabuada, and I represent Mr. Ash. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
The Fifth Amendment is supposed to be a shield that protects the accused from state forces compelling him to be a witness against himself. Faced with a criminal charge that also resulted in this order of dependency, Mr. Ash invoked his Fifth Amendment right throughout the course of his sentence. So there's different points in the record that tend to demonstrate that Mr. Ash invoked his right to not self-incriminate himself, and that's evidenced in the permanency planning review hearing order and the order of dependency itself.
Is there any evidence in the record where your client was asked a question and he declined to answer it based on the Fifth Amendment?
There is nothing directly on point that says that Mr. Ash was questioned and he said, I invoke the Fifth Amendment, but it does seem that the permanency planning review hearing orders, the order of dependency itself, seems to evidence that the department knew that at some point Mr. Ash invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. The social worker also was aware of it. The guardian ad litem was aware.
Where the court has applied directly the Fifth Amendment protection, where there isn't any affirmative assertion of the right?
I don't have that case. I don't have any case to point to, but what I will say is that there is evidence in the record that Mr. Ash did invoke his right at some point. And I will say that some of the cases that I do rely on in my briefing, namely Spedback v. Klein and Gardner v. Broderick, and those cases, both of the gentlemen at issue, they basically just said, I invoke my Fifth Amendment right, and I'm not going to go to, at least in Mr. Spedback's case, I'm not going to go to this judicial proceeding. And the court didn't require him to go to the proceeding and continuously say, I plead the Fifth.
Well, how do you distinguish what the U.S. Supreme Court said in Minnesota versus Murphy about what you need to show about the coercion that's exercised by the state before the failure to affirmatively invoke the Fifth Amendment in response to a question is available?
Sure. So I don't argue that this is a penalty exception case where the right is self-executing. What I do argue is that Mr. Ash was penalized for asserting his Fifth Amendment right. And I do think that there, again, is evidence in the record that Mr. Ash invoked his right at some point, and the department was well aware that he did so because the social worker knew it, the department knew it. It's evidence in the dependency review hearing order, in the permanency planning hearing order, and the GALS report.
How you exercise a Fifth Amendment right, that somehow there's this shield that allows you just say, I'm not going to engage in these activities because somebody might ask me a question and I might say something, and so therefore I'm not going to participate in the activity.
Could you repeat the question?
Well, if someone thinks that simply choosing not to engage in an activity, sometimes mm-hmm. availing yourself of remedial services, is within the scope of the exercise of your Fifth Amendment right, they would be mistaken as to how you exercise your Fifth Amendment right, that it only protects refusing to answer questions. And doesn't the record really reflect some misunderstanding about the Fifth Amendment right, either by your client or his counsel, that the Fifth Amendment protects you from engaging in activities rather than simply refusing to answer questions?
I don't think it reflects either way. So you're sort of saying that this was like a blanket waiver. I think it does.
Like a blanket shield. I don't have to go do any of these things because somebody might ask me a question that might incriminate me if I answer it.
Again, I just don't think that the record is fleshed out enough for us to say that one thing happened or that another thing happened. But what we do know is that Mr. Ash
fleshed out enough.
Well, Mr. Ash does have the consequence of it, and it was evidenced in the findings.
I mean, like a burden of proof. If you haven't fleshed out the record enough, you lose.
Right, but what I'm saying is that Mr. Ash was penalized for exercising his Fifth Amendment right, and let's say that he did invoke his Fifth Amendment right, and this court finds that there's enough in the record to support that he did so, and that that's what the department understood. For example,
I have a real hard time accepting that premise. I'm looking for something in the record that would help me agree with you.
Sure. So I would just, again, point out that the dependency review or the dependency order itself does mention that Mr. Ash at some point invoked his Fifth Amendment right. The permanency planning review hearing order orders that happen afterwards also reflect that. The record, again, unfortunately, it's not fleshed out. This wasn't an issue of contention. Nobody required Mr. Ash to go to the service providers and say, I plead the Fifth, I plead the Fifth, I plead the Fifth.
It really doesn't say Fifth Amendment. It says if father chooses not to participate in these court ordered services due to his pending criminal action, father understands he may be waiving his legal right in any child custody proceeding.
Right, but that'll...
It's more of an affirmative advice to him. If you don't participate in these things, there may be some consequences you haven't anticipated.
Correct. So I think that that sort of reflects that the department was aware that he was going to invoke his Fifth Amendment right. It's not saying it explicitly, but it's alluding to it quite clearly.
But you're asking us to decide the case as if he did invoke his Fifth Amendment right.
Right, but that's what was understood below, and that's what,
well,
I mean.
Why doesn't the court order say that?
That there is an explicit finding in the order of termination that says, I believe it's finding 2.40, that does say that Mr. Ash chose not to engage in services due to his Fifth Amendment concerns. And, of course, it doesn't say that Mr. Ash explicitly invoked, but that leads one to conclude that the trial judge and the finding explicitly says.
Circle back to my misunderstanding of the Fifth Amendment. Those were his Fifth Amendment. There's no finding by the trial court that he ever invoked the Fifth Amendment.
That's true, but I do think...
You aren't able to identify any statement by anyone where there was a question and a decline to answer.
That is true, Your Honor, but I do think that at some point in this dependency, Mr. Ash invoked his Fifth Amendment right, and his test...
You're asking us to think that he actually did do that, even though it's not reflected in the record, that there was a point when he actually sat up on the witness stand and said, I choose not to answer? Or are you asking us in the alternative to just say, to say, well, everybody acted as if he did, so he did, so you should proceed as if he had? Are you saying that he actually did, or we should proceed as if he did?
I'm saying that there's enough in the record for us to deduce that at some point he invoked his Fifth Amendment right, and then I suppose that in the...
Explicitly?
Yes.
To a judge?
Maybe not to a judge, maybe to a service provider, maybe to a gal, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, this thing isn't fleshed out, unfortunately. But I guess in the alternative, I would ask the court to look at the findings and see that the court did display that it sort of looked at this decision unfavorably. And I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Sarah King, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the respondent, the Department of Social and Health Services. The department requests that this court affirm the trial court's order terminating the father's parental rights to this child for three reasons. First, the trial court did not violate the father's Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. Second, the Fifth Amendment does not protect a parent from the consequences of failing to engage in remedial services or timely correcting parenting deficiencies. And third, the department made reasonable efforts in this case to offer the father services. Let's not forget that this case started when this child was only 5 weeks old and the father brutally assaulted this child. The father was convicted of assaulting this child, and there's a 10-year no-contact order in place protecting this child from the father. In this case, the trial court did not violate the father's Fifth Amendment privilege. There's nothing in the record that indicates that the father ever formally invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege. The father was never in a position to answer questions. He was never in a position where he would be compelled to do so. He simply chose to not engage in any services and did not request to engage in services until 18 months into this dependency.
In your brief, you make the argument that he could have asked for use immunity. Is there any case where the department actually procured use immunity for someone participating in remedial services?
No, Your Honor.
That argument's been made in a couple of appellate cases by the department, but it seems to be something that a statute describes, but it's never happened in the recorded history of Washington judicial proceedings. And I'm looking, is that really elusive?
Correct, Your Honor. Well, first, the use immunity that is articulated in the statute is something that would not be enough in this case for the father, and I would agree with counsel in her reply brief that use immunity is not enough.
So if the father wanted to avail himself of remedial services, he would have to answer some questions to people about the events, wouldn't he?
Correct, Your Honor. And the father...
How would he protect himself from those answers coming back to haunt him in the pending criminal proceeding?
As indicated in a JRUS, which is cited in my brief, the father could have sought a protective order from the court.
Well, that's why I asked you the earlier questions. You've conceded that use immunity wouldn't have been enough to protect him and that nobody's ever received that use immunity in Washington.
He would have to request derivative use immunity. With use and derivative use immunity as
our... Is there ever a case that you're aware of where a father who's a party to either a dependency or a termination proceeding has received derivative use immunity?
As indicated in JRUS, it stated that with use and derivative use immunity...
Has it ever happened, though?
Not to
my... I know there's a statute that says it can happen, but has it ever happened?
What's JRUS, by the way?
JRUS is a case that was out of this court. Would the court like to cite?
No, that's okay. I just didn't recognize the name.
But in that case, it did indicate that with the grant of use and derivative use immunity, it would sufficiently protect a parent's Fifth Amendment privilege, and it would place both the parent and the state in the same position had those statements never been made. So the father could have participated in services in this case by seeking use immunity under the statute and by requesting derivative use immunity.
And is there any reason to think he would have actually received?
There's nothing in the record to indicate that
he... Is there any case to show that some other case, some judge thought that was okay?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. Regardless of whether he would have sought the immunity or not, he could have still participated in the cases or in the services, and he could have chosen not to answer specific questions that could have implicated his Fifth Amendment privilege. But again, he chose in this case not to participate in the services.
Did he have his lawyer present at those...
He could have, and his attorney could have advised him not to answer specific questions. But again, he chose in this case not to participate in services.
Hasn't the department taken the position that parents can't bring lawyers into those sessions?
No, Your Honor, the department has not. There's nothing in this record that indicated that the department was taking the position that the attorney couldn't have participated in these services. The department offered these services, wanting the father to participate in them. The father seems to want the court to accept that when a parent is charged with a crime in these cases, that the parent, because of Fifth Amendment concerns, would not need to participate in services during a dependency or start to work towards correcting parental deficiencies while a criminal charge is pending, all while the child has to wait. That is unfair to the child to have to wait until a parent is able to start correcting their parental deficiencies. That's contrary to the statute, which indicates that when the rights of the parent and the child conflict, that the rights of the child shall prevail. The child also has a right in these cases to a speedy resolution of the dependency and termination proceedings, and that would be violated if a parent, because of Fifth Amendment concerns, waits till the criminal process is resolved before they choose to engage in services. In the Fifth Amendment, as cited in my brief with out-of-state cases from JRUS, does not extend to protecting a parent from the consequences of their failure to engage in services or timely correct parenting deficiencies. Moving on, unless the court has any more questions about the Fifth Amendment, the department in this case also made reasonable efforts in offering and providing the father with services. The father throughout these proceedings was ordered to participate in domestic violence and mental health services. Those referrals were made to the father in November 2015, in April, May, and September of 2016. The trial court properly considered whether the department made reasonable efforts in offering and providing the father with services. Indeed, while not required, the trial court actually made a specific finding about the department offering and or making reasonable efforts in providing the father with services. The father in his briefing claims that the department after the bench trial in June of 2016 failed to make reasonable efforts. However, the court should reject those arguments. The department in these in this case, actually made referrals to the father on April and May of 2016, but now they're claiming on appeal that they failed to make those offer services. However, the referrals in this case were already made. Further, there's nothing in the record that defines when the what is meant by when the criminal matter is resolved. The father on appeal now is claiming that's after the stipulated bench trial in June. However, there's nothing in the record to indicate that's what was meant by the resolution of the criminal matter. There's nothing in the record to indicate that even his attorney in the underlying dependency believed that the resolution of the criminal matter was after the bench trial. After
What is the department's position as to what the word resolution means?
I think it's reasonable to believe that that meant after the father was sentenced in October of 2016. The department was also told by his attorney to also not speak to the father. So the department was also operating under that as well. And when his attorney contacted the department in September of 2016, the department the very next day went to the Snohomish County Jail and met with the father and again referred him for services. The following month after he was sentenced, and upon learning that the father was transferred to Shelton, the department that same day contacted a provider who had agreed to go into the jail to perform an evaluation to learn about their willingness to travel down to Shelton, learned that that provider was unwilling to do so. The department then contacted the father's attorney about providers down in the Shelton area and doing the evaluation down there. The attorney in this case didn't respond back to the department for almost a month, a few weeks before the termination trial. The department in this case made reasonable efforts to offer and provide him with services. The trial court, under the incarcerated parent statute, was only required to consider the reasonable efforts that the department made, and in this case, the department did so. Regardless, services in this case would not have corrected the father's parenting deficiencies in the near future. In this case, this was a 20-month-long dependency. The father had failed to engage in services, failed to timely correct his parenting deficiencies. The father, through his own testimony, had indicated that even a year after he would be released from prison, that he wouldn't be in a position to parent the child, that he wouldn't be able to provide the stability that the child needed and deserved, and that he wasn't even asking for the child to return to his care. And furthermore, there was a 10-year no-contact order in place.
Do we really rely on that at all?
Isn't
when there's a pending termination proceeding, is it appropriate for the criminal court to impose a 10-year no-contact that's not subject to modification in the termination proceeding where the court has before?
In this case, Your Honor, in the no-contact order, there was language that if the father sought contact with the child within the dependency, he would need to undergo a batterer's treatment and evaluation. So there was a way for him to modify
it. Isn't that the wrong place for that decision to be made?
I don't believe so. There's no further questions. I would just briefly conclude that the department asks the court to deny the father's appeal and affirm the trial court's termination order. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'd just like to remind this court that Mr. Ash is appealing his criminal conviction and that there was evidence in the record that...
What difference does that make to us?
I just want to remind this court that...
But why is it of any consequence to any issue we decide?
It's just something that I thought was noteworthy, just because
I'm curious why what you think we would do with that information, since none of the issues before us seem to depend upon him having been convicted.
Sure, I'll move on. And also, I would like to flesh out the argument regarding the findings that seem to evince that Mr. Ash was penalized for exercising his Fifth Amendment right. So, as I discussed in my briefing, in Spevak v. Klein and in Gardner v. Broderick, those cases only involved mere property interests. So it was a loss of reputation, it was a loss of a job, it was a loss of prestige. And so it follows with even greater force that in a case where you might be losing your fundamental right to the care and custody of your child, that one could not be penalized for asserting one's Fifth Amendment right throughout the course of a dependency. But I would like to point out that many of the findings sort of equate Mr. Ash's decision to assert his Fifth Amendment rights as an outright refusal to engage in services. For example, finding 2.66 says Mr. Ash, for 11 months, refused to engage in services. Finding 2.89 says the father refused. I know, it's not like he was, I feel like that sort of equates Mr. Ash's invocation of his Fifth Amendment rights as if he didn't think that he needed services, he didn't want to do services.
Accurate. I mean, if it takes a certain amount of time to correct a deficiency, you measure from when you begin to take the corrective action. And so when the court's trying to measure how long it's going to take for this father to correct his deficiencies, is it appropriate to consider when he first was had those services available to him and whether he did avail himself of them?
You can consider them, and I would agree that that's something that the court was in its discretion to do, but the language that it used...
Is the finding 266 in any way factually inaccurate?
I think it is inaccurate because it's not a refusal to engage in services. It's making a decision that I need to invoke my Fifth Amendment right because I don't want to be convicted of something. I don't want the state to use my words against me in a future criminal proceeding. When I think of the word refusal in the context of a termination where, you know, someone's alleging that the parent refused to do services, it's usually, oh, the parent never showed up to services, didn't want to do services, thought services were beneath them, and that's not what the Fifth Amendment is all about. And that was a hard decision for Mr. Ash to make. So I see that I'm out of time, so I will just ask this court to reverse the order of termination. Thank you.
Thank you.